There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Grill. We're live from Barassi, up here on the rooftop garden. Absolutely gorgeous late afternoon into evening. We're with you through till 7 o'clock tonight and all the latest in the world of sport coming your way. FA Cup, we've got all the latest from that one, early kickoffs to get our head around. Winter Olympics, day 8 continues as well. We've got golf in various corners of the world. There's international cricket and a bit of club rugby as well. So plenty for us to get our heads around. Building up to a big fight as well over in the United Kingdom, Groves against Eubank Jr. Just one of the talking points for us this afternoon. Grill panel will be joining me in just a few moments' time. You know the numbers to get your say heard here on The Grill. All you have to do is text us now on 4001 with all of your thoughts. And we will, of course, keep you updated with all the early goals in the early kickoffs right here on The Grill. This is The Grill live here on Dubai i103.8. If you'd like to have your say, text on 4001. Have your say online at Dubai iSport with you through till 7.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai i Messenger app.
Lots to look forward to, and we're in good company as well. Grill panel here in effect, and it's a warm welcome to Mark Archer is with us here today.
Afternoon, Tom, and a very toasty afternoon to everyone in the UAE. Barassi Beach is absolutely humming this afternoon. Myself and Dale peeked over the top of the rooftop garden, and it's absolutely buzzing along down at the beach there. So not too much action so far up the roof garden, but plenty happening on the beach. I'm sure they'll be joining us to watch all the FA Cup action on the big screen later. Just to mark your card for this afternoon, rugby union, well, it is a one-week break in the hostilities of the Six Nations, so the return of club rugby in the Northern Hemisphere takes place. Also, Super Rugby returns with the new 15-team format this afternoon. International cricket to bring you a couple of interesting results yesterday in India, in South Africa and down under New Zealand, PGA Tour golf. And I'm looking forward to bringing you live coverage of live curling this afternoon. The Great Britain women's team are taking on South Korea. Also looking forward to Dale Gordon bringing you the short track speed skating and also the third round of the skeleton.
I'd be like Bambi on ice if I was on that.
That is the voice of our other grill panellist today. And before we intro him, have a listen to this. The former Norwich, West Ham, Rangers, is with us. Disco Dale is with us. Dale Gordon, Flash Aziza, of course, well known here in the UAE. Good to have you on board, Flash.
Good afternoon, Tom. You've absolutely killed me there. No doubt.
It's his fault. He did it.
It was Archer's fault. I think the next one will be remember the one? D-I-S-C-O. Desirable. I don't know about that, but good afternoon. Nice to be here.
That'll be next week, that's for sure. Good to have you on board, Dalo. FA Cup, it's the emotion of the FA Cup again, isn't it? Some good ties to look forward to today.
Most definitely. I mean, obviously, after an exciting Champions League week, the Premier League obviously has its backstep today. Obviously, we're looking forward to the FA Cup. Every team's obviously out there to try to get a place in the quarterfinals. Obviously, action was last night with Chelsea coming through 4-0 victors over Hull, and Giroud scoring his first goal for Chelsea, and also Leicester as well after a controversial couple of weeks, obviously with the Foxes. Jamie Vardy on the score sheet with Riyad Mahrez obviously assisting as well, so it looks like he's back in the fray as well. So Leicester through to the quarterfinals and joined by Chelsea as well with a 4-0 win over Hull. This afternoon's ties, some excellent ties. The early kickoff was Sheffield Wednesday versus Swansea City. Be interesting to see how Swansea react after a couple of really nasty little injuries that happened in the previous round. Notts County, when Wilfred Boney obviously picked up a serious knee injury, a cruciate injury or to his knee, and also as well Leroy Fer, who picked up an Achilles, he tore his Achilles as well. So they're at the bare bones, to be fair, Swansea. They've had some really good results recently in the Premier League, which is obviously their main place to survive in that league, and we'll see how they get on against Wednesday this afternoon. West Brom, Southampton, Huddersfield, Manchester United. It'll be interesting to see how Man United get on. They left Pogba out. I think he's ill. We're not too sure about the true meaning behind that. Also, Wigan Athletic against Manchester City, a repeat of the final a few years ago as well, which Wigan obviously came out of victors. Rochdale against Tottenham. It's interesting, the Rochdale-Tottenham game, that everyone's having a look at the Rochdale pitch. I think their previous round against Millwall in the replay, the pitch was absolutely atrocious, and they've had to have that relayed, a brand new pitch there as well, which will obviously suit the Spurs side after a very, very good 2-2 result in Turin. And the last one is Brighton against Coventry. So lots of exciting ties to look forward to, Tom, this afternoon. And it starts off with Sheffield Wednesday against Swansea in the early kickoff.
Early kickoff, Sheffield Wednesday against Swansea City. Got early kickoff up here in Scotland for you as well. Ross County taking on Heart of Midlothian. Both those games kicking off in the next 20 minutes or so. Mark Archer, what do you give to this this chat about Paul Pogba at the moment? Ill? Anything in that?
Well, he is ill and is going to miss that match against Huddersfield. And I think a big opportunity for Huddersfield this afternoon. United have been, I was just thinking about it now as we talked about, you know, FA Cup and upsets and the Manchester United season. For me, and I follow them closely, I'm a fan, every second week it's been like a must-win match for United. Mm. Even though they are second in the league and they've kind of bumbled their way there, I think it's fair to say, they're still in the Champions League and they've got a winnable tie coming up with that fixture this week, and they're still in the FA Cup. But it hasn't been all that rosy in the Manchester United camp this week. Jose Mourinho yesterday in a very defensive mood in the press conference, blaming the media for lies and speculation and making things up. And it all doesn't seem to be fitting together quite as smoothly for Jose Mourinho at the moment. So it's fair to say Huddersfield will go into that tie this afternoon with probably feeling quite bullish. I mean, particularly after United's result last week when they had, it seems as though they never, and Jose Mourinho came out, they lost to Newcastle, said, you know, we could have played another three matches against them, we weren't going to score a goal, which is probably not quite the right message to be sending.
Maybe Pogba got himself a little cold by sitting on the bench for so long in the second half after Mourinho pulled him off, so he looked a little bit cold in the afternoon. But Huddersfield, you're absolutely right, Arch. Huddersfield are very confident at the moment. They've come on the back of an excellent win against a Bournemouth side, who were on the back of three wins as well. On the bounce, Huddersfield beating Bournemouth last week 4-1 at home, and we know that Huddersfield also as well have had the upper hand against Manchester United at home in the league as well, where they beat them quite comfortably as well. So it is a tough tie for Manchester United, but I think any tie that Manchester United go into at the moment, there's an awful lot of scrutiny on the manager and obviously with the team as well. Sanchez as well, a couple of games he's played in for United, you know, I think that it's a bit stop-start as well. They can't really find the right sort of formation and the blend between if he wants to play Martial or Rashford or obviously Pogba in there holding or alongside Matic. And as I said, I think that Huddersfield will look upon this afternoon's ties and a great opportunity to try and obviously get that place in the quarterfinals.
I mean, we've got to have a quick word, though, about this whole Mourinho thing, because he's been very quick to sort of defend his whole stance around Paul Pogba. There are doubts, question marks about Pogba's future at the moment. Mourinho's done everything he can throughout the week to douse these rumours. But where there's smoke, there's fire, isn't there? And there's the very fact that we're having this conversation, the very fact that the journalists have been quizzing Mourinho throughout the week means that all is not well between Messrs. Pogba and Mourinho at the moment. Or is that the media just doing their bit?
I think the media do stir things up a little bit, Tom, without a shadow of a doubt. And I think, you know, he's a marquee signing for Manchester United. Obviously, we know that he's on his return from Juventus. Obviously, Man United is a youngster and coming back. And everybody thought that the way Manchester United started the season, you know, the sort of like first, I mean, maybe sort of five or six games, they were flying. They were playing some attractive football. They were playing a lot more off the front foot, a lot more pace through the phases, and Lukaku was firing on all cylinders. And I think at the moment that the pressure has been put on Mourinho and his players. We know that he is a master of trying to take the pressure off the players. He did that last week by saying that obviously Newcastle were played very, very well, and we, you know, like Arch has mentioned, that they won't score if they're out there for another 10 hours. But I think it's a bang average United team at the moment, in my opinion. Obviously, they're in a situation where they are obviously still in the Champions League with a tie that, which has been, you know, that they should go through. But I think that the FA Cup is obviously important to Manchester United. They won it many, many, many times, and they may well look upon that as a trophy, the only trophy they're going to go for this year. I think the Champions League is much, much far beyond them. You know, if you look at likes of Liverpool, you know, the 5-0 win away to Porto, the Spurs result And obviously we're waiting for Chelsea against Barcelona. So a lot of pressure on the Reds this afternoon, and also as well in the last phase of the season. I think that Huddersfield will look upon that, and I think Mourinho, if things don't go well this afternoon, and it makes me laugh really, because I think Jamie Redknapp, I think, said that he came under some criticism with Mourinho, said that, you know, he's just signed a new contract, and what has he actually done to deserve that new contract, you know? So, it all is not well at Manchester United, and I think that, this afternoon's game is a massive, massive game for all the Reds.
We know that Paul Pogba will not be making the short trip over the Pennines for Huddersfield against Manchester United a little later on. We're told that he's ill, and apparently the man that's come in to replace the £90 million sterling man is an academy kid, Ethan Hamilton. So some big boots to fill there, Mark Archer.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how if he takes a part. I'm sure he'll start on the bench, and he'll use some more of his experienced players. And Herrera might slot him there, or Matic may play a slightly different role as well. But interesting to see what formation Mourinho takes. As much as he needs a result, he almost needs a performance. He needs the guys to come out and really play for him and play well, get a good result, and things do change around quickly in football, and they'll go into that European Cup tie midweek in a good place. But obviously that's a priority. But realistically for United, they're not going to win the league. That's pretty much sewn up by City, the noisy blue neighbours there. Mm. And as Dale rightly said, they're the long shots at best to even get close to a Champions League semi-final or a final. So I think the FA Cup is Mourinho's best chance of some silverware. And he needs to take it pretty seriously, and he needs a performance from his players this afternoon.
Yeah, he's a master of tactics. We know that. Obviously, he had the success in the Europa League last year, and everybody seems to knock that. But I think Arsenal, another rival of Manchester United, have looked upon that as an opportunity to try to get into the Champions League, because they'll fall short as well. They won't, in my opinion, they won't get into the top four. So, Manchester United done it last year and earned the right to play in the Champions League. And as you're absolutely right, on Wednesday, they have a very tricky tie against Sevilla away. So, yes, he will be looking to maybe rest some of his big guns. I think the Pogba one is just more of an excuse, really, to give him a little bit of a rest going into that game on Wednesday evening. But, he is a master of tactics. The only thing is that Manchester United are the sort of side that will score the one goal and just... and shut up shop, and he'll be happy with that. And I don't think the true Red supporters want to see that. When they see the naughty neighbours City playing the way they're playing, and not only that, the way Liverpool play, the attractive football they're playing, and also as well with Spurs, in my opinion, I think Manchester United have fallen short of maybe, I think they will get in the top four, and I think that Chelsea possibly will be the team that misses out. But they really do need a good performance this afternoon, and he's obviously... like Tom said, has brought in some young academy players to try to boost them up a little bit.
Just to let you bring you a bit of a late team news for the early kickoff in the FA Cup, and Swansea have had a bit of a blow during the warm-up. Alfie Mawson, who was named in the original starting 11, has been forced out. The centre-back rolled his ankle in the warm-up. Carl Norton, Sheffielder, who started out with the Blades, takes his place in the lineup for Swansea. So more bad news for Swansea with Alfie Mawson, who was originally named in the starting 11, out with an ankle injury that he incurred during the warm-up. So both sides making changes. Let's get that Sheffield Wednesday starting 11 for you. Dawson Hunt, Venancio Jones, Poodle, Fox, Boyd, and the team sheet's just disappeared.
Butterfield, Reach, Fox, Wallace, and Nuhu.
That's the starting lineup for Wednesday. As for Swansea, Nordveld, Bartley, Mawson, Van der Hoorn, Roberts, Olsen, Carroll, Key, Narsing, Routledge, and Abraham. But that Mawson is the late replacement because obviously he's turned his ankle, so will not start in that game. It's going to be an interesting one, isn't it? A lot of focus on Carlos Carvajal at the moment. You rate him as a manager?
Absolutely. I think that also as well, he's going back to the side at Sheffield Wednesday that sacked him early on the season. So it's funny how the FA Cup brings these ties together, isn't it? And I think if he was at Swansea City in the Premier League and not picking up the results, and we know what has happened at West Bromwich Albion at the moment, and they have all sorts of controversial things going on at Albion at the moment with a trip away to Marbella that ended very, very sour. And they have a tricky tie this afternoon as well. But, yeah, I mean, Sheffield Wednesday, I think that Carvajal is a, as a manager, when you get sacked from a Premier League side, Championship side, you don't expect to then, obviously, straight away, 2 weeks later, probably pick up a Premier League team in your next managerial job after Paul Clement left there. And there was question marks about him, but what he has done, what I like about him, his energy on the touchline. You know, he's very organised. He's most definitely got the players on his side. They've picked up an unbelievable run of results. They really have, and pushed themselves away from the bottom of the Premier League. And going back to Sheffield Wednesday, personally, from his own point of view, he will be obviously wanting to get that tie well and truly, tied up this afternoon to get into the quarterfinals. And Wednesday's always a tricky place to go to. I know Hillsborough very well in my days at Norwich City, and it's a very difficult place to play. Very passionate supporters, you know, get behind their team, and it will be a tricky tie. And I expect that there might be a little bit of an upset this afternoon on that one.
Speaking of trips away, it looks like West Brom had a pretty good trip away during the week. took some time off between fixtures to head over to Spain, and obviously a few boys up to a bit of hijinks, and they commandeered a taxi at some stage.
I believe they decided to take a taxi for a ride. Obviously, they didn't have any euros on them, so they decided to take them for themselves. So I don't know what these Premier League footballers are earning these days. Obviously not enough, the West Brom players. But there was the magnificent four, shall we say, that decided to hijack a taxi, but just gone a little bit of a joyride. And that's not the sort of press that Alan Pardew
doesn't need at
the moment. No, most definitely not. And I think that also as well last week with the chief exec and the chairman of West Bromwich Albion being sacked as well, and now the controversial taxi ride for the four players, it's not the sort of things that needs to be read in the press at the moment for West Bromwich.
You're quite right though, Flash, aren't you? Because you know these boys, they don't earn enough, so they've got to go take a second job, a bit of a taxi, you know, running the taxi of the evening.
Well, exactly. I mean, this is my second job. I do this for the love of it. I do this for the goals that come off your backside and get played on the radio and Flash, aha, saver of Barasti, and DISCO. So yeah.
Bring it. I'm in the company of Dale Gordon and Mark Archer, and of course you. If you'd like to have your say, please do exactly that. You can text us now at 4001. Taking a short break. When we come back, I'll put you in with all the latest news on all the latest calls.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. Talking of the game, got a couple of early kickoffs in the FA Cup. Where are we at in the FA Cup? Where's this? Fifth round now, Delo?
Yeah, fifth round. One away from the quarterfinals. So the season just goes so quick, doesn't it? It's incredible the way the season just flies by. You're absolutely right. And obviously the two games last night, Chelsea 4-0 winners against Hull at home, and obviously Leicester winning 1-0 at home to Sheffield United.
Las Palmas playing Sevilla at the moment as well. That's the early kickoff over in La Liga, and there are no goals in that one for you. I'll keep you updated with scores as they develop throughout the afternoon. Mark Archer's alongside us as well. He's looking forward to some rugby action a little later on. What time do things get underway for the rugby boys?
Yeah, of course, it's a week off of the Six Nations between rounds, so focus is on the Northern Hemisphere club rugby. Two matches last night in the Aviva Premiership, three fixtures today, all kicking off at 7 p.m. Leicester Tigers hosting Quins, Northampton at home to London Irish, and Worcester Warriors will face Gloucester. So three matches at 7 o'clock. There's also matches in the Pro 14. Leinster at home to Scarlets at a top-of-the-table clash for Conference B. That should be a good match. And Cardiff Blues will face Munster. French top 14, also five matches this afternoon. Montpellier, La Rochelle, Racing 92, they're the top three teams in that league. And, of course, Super Rugby returns this afternoon. The tournament kickoff is in Cape Town at Newlands, where the Stormers will host the Jaguars from Argentina. And then the late kickoff at Emirates Park in Johannesburg, where the Lions will face the Sharks. Of course, plenty to talk about rugby. TMOs, of course, have been the feature of the week. Lots of discussion regarding was it a try, wasn't a try. No one seems to have really made their mind up yet, 100% conclusive either way. So interesting talking points there in rugby union. Not much cricket to talk about today, Tom. Live stuff anyway. But obviously a couple of interesting results yesterday. Virat Kohli in imperious form. His 35th ODI century. He's finished the six-match series with only 558 runs. Pretty remarkable, really. The most in a batsman in a bilateral series. And a pretty high-scoring match at Eden Park, Auckland, to talk about, where Australia defeated the New Zealand Black Caps in a world record run chase, where they chased down pretty easily 245 for 5 to beat the Black Caps. Big match for England tomorrow. They need to beat New Zealand in Hamilton to have a chance to go through to the final and take on the Aussies. So that's rugby and cricket for you. We'll be across all the action as it comes later this afternoon.
Did want to ask you about that New Zealand, that Black Cap Australia game, because a bit of a run fest as well. My only sort of grumble about it would be the boundaries. The boundaries were so short in that game.
It's a rugby ground, so they can't change the boundaries.
The boundaries are so short. What's the point?
Well, it's the same for both teams. I mean, they don't change between innings. So, look, it's always been short boundaries. It's funny angles at Eden Park in Auckland. We've seen some interesting matches there in T20 and World Cup 50-over cricket in the past. But it is literally a rugby field with a drop-in pitch. And, of course, with Super Rugby starting this weekend, there'll be international Super Rugby on that next weekend. And, of course, they'll pull the pitch out as they do the drop-in pitch, and rugby season will get underway and the cricket will go elsewhere. But it is what it is. It's the biggest capacity ground in terms of crowd, so you can get 45, 50,000 people in there. So it's good for the coffers for New Zealand cricket or for the teams taking part. And it's just the fact that... again, it's short boundaries. People are saying it's a bit of a farce. 65 metres is nothing these days with the big bats, and it's not really much fun for the bowlers. But it is what it is, as they say, and both teams have to play on the same field. So the Aussies too good chasing down that big score yesterday.
But it must be disappointing for the Black Caps not to be able to defend a total like that. But I suppose it shows just how good or the potential of Australia in that shorter format of the game.
I mean, they're stacked with great players, aren't they? We saw that in the Big Bash, and some the chap I'd never heard of before, Darcy Short. He opened the batting with David Warner. He scored 76 off 44 balls. That was after Martin Guptill had that wonderful innings for the Black Caps. He scored a century off only 49 balls in the match. But David Warner, who scored 59 off 24 deliveries only, Darcy Short with that 76 off 40 balls, got Australian off to an absolute flyer. And Aaron Flinch came in. Usually opening batsman came in about 5 or 6 in the order and smoked 36 off 14. So they won with 7 balls to spare, which doesn't sound like much, but it's a massive margin, really, and only 5 down, chasing 244 for the victory. The Aussies cruise past at 245 for 5. And the pressure now is on England, who haven't won a match yet in the series. They need to beat New Zealand by a big margin tomorrow to make the final. Ben Stokes has arrived over there. He's not going to play. Next up is England, New Zealand in a one-day series, which should be quite interesting, quite well balanced, but still in this T20 series. So there's that match tomorrow, England versus New Zealand at Hamilton, and then there's a final in a couple of days' time. England need to win well against the New Zealand team to play Aussie. Australia now through that final.
You listen to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from Brest, where the game is always on. Lot to look forward to in the coming hours. Lot to look forward to in the coming weeks as well. What we've got coming up in the rest of the show, we're going to be talking ITU World Triathlon Abu Dhabi. We're going to be joined by one of the Emirati triathletes who will be participating in that event. They're going to be joining us live here in just a little while. And equally, we'll get all the latest from the tennis. We had the draw, the official draw, a little earlier on today. The women's event gets underway on Monday. Qualifiers taking place as we speak at the moment, so we'll get all the latest from Robbie Greenfield on that. A lot to look forward to. If you are in the vicinity, do pop on down to Barasti, where you can watch all your sport on the big screen live and uninterrupted. If you can't make it down here, keep it locked here on Dubai I-103.8.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Yeah, this is The Grill, live with you all the way through till 7 o'clock this evening, and we have liftoff. Kickoff in the FA Cup early, and Dale Gordon's watching this one for us. Any action?
Yeah, straight from the kit. Well, two and a half minutes into the game. Sheffield Wednesday have started very, very well, Tom. Going straight at the heart of the Swansea defence, went straight through. I can't really see who actually had the strike, but it was a right foot finish just inside the box. Goalkeeper made an excellent save for an early corner to Sheffield Wednesday. Nothing came of it, but an excellent start by Sheffield Wednesday. It still remains 0-0.
That is also the score over in Spain. We're half an hour into that one. Las Palmas taking on Sevilla in the early kickoff in La Liga. No goals in that one, and also no goals to report north of the English border, because up in Scotland, early kickoff there, Ross County against Hearts.
Just on that one, Tom, in Scotland they have a new manager.
Oh, yeah. Of course they do, yeah.
Yeah, they have a new man. So congratulations to Alec McLeish on his appointment as the new Scotland manager. As we know that Alec McLeish, a very successful manager domestically with Glasgow Rangers, thinking winning 8 trophies and also as well 2 promotions, I think one with Birmingham as well. And his second spell at the national job for Scotland. So congratulations to Alec McLeish as he takes over the reins from Gordon Strachan. Has been a bit long-winded. They obviously interviewed Michael O'Neill as well, the Northern Ireland manager, who had a successful... just fell short, shall I say, of a World Cup campaign to get them into Russia. Just fell short, but obviously felt that his calibre as a manager was something that Scotland were looking for, and he turned it down, and Alec McLeish is now the new Scotland manager.
Played with him? Played against him?
Played against him, yeah, played against him, showing me age now. Yeah, played against him when he was at Aberdeen, centre-half. You know, you'd certainly know if he came through in a tackle.
No nonsense.
That's the reason why I used to play on the wing. So I used to let Ali McCoist and Mark Hatley take the elbows from Alec McLeish. And played a couple of times at Pittodrie for Glasgow Rangers. And as we know, back in the day when Glasgow Rangers were a decent side, 3 points are in the bag for the Blues.
Let's hear from Chris Boyd now, the Scottish professional footballer. He's been commenting about the appointment of Alec McLeish. He says it's a good move, safe pair of hands.
Yeah, it's a safe pair of hands. You know, I think Alec McLeish knows exactly how you know, the SFA run inside and outside in terms of on the pitch. You know, he's got a good bunch of boys there, and hopefully he's the man to get to a major tournament. But, you know, it ain't going to be easy. There's no getting away from it, you know, because I think from the 24 European, or the 24 times that the trophy's been held, the European Championships, we've only managed to qualify for 2. So this whole, you know, myth of Scotland, you know, deserve to be at major trophy, major competitions. It's, you know, it's difficult to get there. But, you know, I hope Alec is the man to change those fortunes.
Football Kill man there, Chris Boyd, giving his thoughts as well. That a fair assumption? Safe pair of hands for McLeish?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there was so many ex-manager. My ex-manager, Walter Smith, was touted as he was going to be offered the job. Yeah. I think that Walter Smith is happy with his role at Glasgow Rangers, sitting in the boardroom and having his prawn sandwiches at half-time. So, no, they're a safe pair of hands, and I think that it's always a difficult job to take over from Gordon Strachan, who had a, you know, I thought he'd done all right, Gordon Strachan. I thought he didn't have a bad sort of like campaign with you know, with Scotland, and again, another team that just fell short of the finals as well. And I think that Chris Boyd is absolutely right. You know, they've gone with somebody who has proven, knows the Scottish game through and through. Malky Mackay, ex-Norwich City player as well, who is, I think he's director of football with the Scottish FA, again, was another candidate for the job, but he remains in his role with the Scottish FA, and, you know, they need to put all that behind them now. The sort of like the saga with Michael O'Neill, was he going to go, was he going to stay with Northern Ireland, and they need to look forward now and progress now to obviously try to you know, to claim a major spot in a competition. But it's going to be difficult, because obviously if you look at the players now, Tom, the top players who are playing in the English Premier League from years ago, you know, you had quite a few decent, you know, quality players from Scotland, but now it's far and few between, and it's a very, very difficult league. We know that in the past they said about Celtic and Rangers joining the Premier League. I don't think that'll ever happen. But good luck to Alec McLeish. You know, he's a gentleman as well, and I wish him all the best.
Let's turn our attention to the world of rugby union, because we've got a new leader at the top of the Premiership back in the United Kingdom, the Viva Premiership, that is. There was a game last night, wasn't there?
There was indeed, yeah. 2 games last night. The result that you're talking about there is Saracens have moved to the top of the Viva Premiership. They had a tight victory, 13-3 away against Sale Sharks. The other result last night is Newcastle Falcons having a good season this year in the Viva Premiership. They are perennial strugglers in that division, but they have given their Premiership playoff hopes a boost with a bonus points victory over Bath, 29-12. Funny time in the Viva Premiership with so many players who play in the Six Nations Championship all the way with their respective countries, whether it be mainly with England, but also a few guys from Scotland play down there, and a few of the Welsh players play across there. So it's kind of a weakened time for the club sides, but Saracens doing what they have to do, moving to the top of the Premiership. with that result against Sale. And we talked about a couple of results earlier, later today, 3 p.m. 7 p.m. starts there. Welford Road, Leicester Tigers hosting Quins, 8th versus 9th. Both those clubs having difficult seasons this year in the Premiership. 7 p.m. Worcester Warriors in 11th. They head to Gloucester. High flying. Your boys, Tom, flying in 4th. That's a good positioning for them to be at this stage of the season, Gloucester. And then Northampton again struggling, usually one of the sort of top six teams in the Premiership, struggling down in 10th. They're at home to last place London Irish, hoping to get a victory today at Franklin Gardens to push them up the table.
Leinster against Scarlets and Cardiff Blues against Munster, two games in the Guinness Pro 14. Whole host of games to be played over in France today as well. And as Archie mentioned a little earlier on, it's the return of Super Rugby. There have, however, been a few changes to Super Rugby this year.
In 2018, some big changes are coming to Super Rugby.
Brilliant. Straight through. Oh, what an under tackle.
With a new look competition format. Here's how it works. The best teams and players from across the Southern Hemisphere will compete in a 15-side competition made up of three conferences. An Australian conference made up of four Aussie sides, the Brumbies, the Rebels, the Reds and the Waratahs, along with the Japanese-based team, the Sunwolves. A formidable New Zealand conference will consist of five New Zealand teams, the Blues, the Chiefs, the Crusaders, the Highlanders and the Hurricanes. And finally, a South African conference made up of four South African teams, the Bulls, the Lions, the Sharks and the Stormers. I'll be joined by Argentinian side, the Jaguares. So, what does it all mean for your team? Let's take the Brumbies as an example. Each team will play 16 games in the regular season, 8 games at home and 8 games away, along with 2 byes. That'll consist of 8 fierce home and away derbies against the 4 other sides in your team's conference, as well as 8 massive cross-conference blockbusters against 4 teams from each of the other conferences. For the Brumbies, that's 4 teams from the New Zealand Conference and 4 teams from the South African Conference. Throughout the season, all the teams in each conference will be accumulating points, which will go towards their final competition standings. At the end of the regular season, 8 teams will qualify for the Super Rugby Finals. But who? Well, the 3 conference champions. They'll all automatically qualify and will host home finals in week 1. The last home finals spot will be allocated to the next highest performing team. The 4 remaining spots are wildcard spots. They'll be awarded to the next 4 best teams based on regular season competition points, irrespective of the conference they come from. From there, it's a simple 7-game knockout format. The winners of the quarterfinals will play off in the semi-finals. Then the winners of the semi-finals will meet in the final, where the champion will be decided.
So they haven't overcomplicated matters then, Arch?
Well, they've tried to simplify it because obviously, of course, Super Rugby had moved to 18 teams last year. They got rid of 3 of them. A couple of South African teams went by the wayside, of course, also the Western Force over there in Perth. So they got it down to 15 teams, which is better for the competition because it's a bit stronger now across the competition. There was too many mismatches, too many weak sides were part of it as the 18-team expansion. So it's down to 15 teams, 3 conferences of 5. You play 16 matches, you play 8 matches in your conference and 4 matches against the other conference teams. And then by the end of that, we'll have some playoffs and have a winner sometime in June or July. But, the tournament kicks off today in Cape Town. 2 matches taking place in South Africa. Stormers host the Jaguares from Argentina, and then at Emirates Park at 7:15 in Joburg. The Lions will face the Sharks. You know, it just seems as though Super Rugby final wasn't that long ago. So interesting to see. It's the start of a long rugby season for all the guys down in New Zealand, Australia and South Africa. And, looking forward to it.
Fair to assume that it'll be dominated yet again by the New Zealand sides?
I think that's fair to say, albeit though like the what's happened in South Africa by losing two teams and Australia by losing one team, it should mean that those other sides who are left remaining in Australia and South Africa should be a bit stronger now. They should have picked up a few of the better players from the couple of franchises there that have been removed. So they should be stronger, in theory. It hasn't been the way it's worked out in recent years, with really the New Zealand Conference being the strongest conference in Super Rugby. And the teams in that conference have to play each other a lot more, which has kind of made it tougher, whereas some of the other conferences have had some quite easy victories. But I think it's hard to, it'd be foolish to say that the strength won't be in that New Zealand conference. Let's hope the Australian teams, I think last year, if you remember back, I think the Australian teams didn't win a match against the New Zealand side in Super Rugby at all, which is a pretty poor effort there when you think you've got home fixtures and you've got some strength and depth. So let's hope it's competitive. Let's hope the teams... it's usually tough to win away in Super Rugby. You've got to travel all the way down to South Africa or Argentina or even Japan. So it is quite tough to win away, but let's see what happens. But it's all set up. A long old Southern Hemisphere rugby season, of course, it all culminates down in the Northern Hemisphere at the end of the year when the international teams from the Southern Hemisphere go down for those autumn internationals. So it'll be interesting to see now, 2 years or under 2 years, 18 months away from a Rugby World Cup, a lot of players really want to find form. Super Rugby gets them into the spotlight for the national selectors, and players who are on the fringes really want a good season to force their way into international reckoning, because I think those international coaches down under in New Zealand and South Africa now really want to get their squads together, knowing who they are going into a World Cup year next year.
One thing that we have seen in recent seasons is the emergence of the new franchises, Sunwolves out of Japan, Los Jaguares over in Argentina as well. Some great results for them in recent seasons. Do you expect, given the experience they've had in recent years, to see more of them this year, or is it still a big ask against the more established teams?
Look, I think it's great for Argentinian rugby and Japanese rugby that they have franchises in Super Rugby. They haven't really, they've got some good one-off results, but they haven't really been that consistent and had consistent victories and really got momentum. They haven't really threatened the big powerhouses in Super Rugby, and you just hope after a few seasons now they start to win matches, they make a bit of a fortress at home, you know, to go to Tokyo or go down to Buenos Aires and play should be really tough. It should be like cauldrons for the home support. And let's hope they get stronger. It's good for Super Rugby that they're part of the bigger competition, but I don't think they've justified it yet fully. I would have thought the Argentinian team in particular haven't really kicked on like they should have done, and they should be getting consistently bigger results. And that again, one-off results are good, but they need to back it up weekend after weekend after weekend. And Super Rugby is tough because there is a lot of travel involved, you know, for a lot of those teams, big international travel to play one match and then go back to your own country or do a bit of a tour. So let's hope they do better this season. Of course, both those countries will have aspirations. Japan at home in that World Cup next year want to put on a good performance, and of course Argentina, who have been pretty good performance on the world rugby stage, particularly at World Cups in the last few editions of the Rugby World Cup, they'll be looking to kick on again and have a good World Cup next year in Japan.
You're listening to The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. Bringing you up to date with all the latest scores from the early kickoffs in the FA Cup up in Scotland and over in Spain in just a few moments' time. Plus, we're going to be speaking to a man who is going to be competing at the forthcoming ITU World Triathlon event down in Abu Dhabi. So do stay tuned for that.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai iSport.
Yeah. Good to have you with us. You're listening to The Grill live here at Barasti. We're up here on the rooftop garden, broadcasting between now and 7 o'clock. We're watching the Emirates FA Cup. Early kickoff in the FA Cup. And we've got the former Rangers, Norwich and West Ham midfield maestro, Disco Dale, here with us, keeping an eye on the proceedings. Dale Gordon, what's the latest?
Yes, approaching 20 minutes, Tom. It's still Sheffield Wednesday 0, Swansea 0. Well, I've got to say, to be fair, you'd be picked to see who is the actual Premier League team. Swansea City have hardly been in Sheffield Wednesday's half. It's really been that dominant. So it's 72% of possession at the moment with Sheffield Wednesday. It was Adam Reach with that early chance after 3 minutes when he burst through into the Swansea penalty area, and an excellent save by the Swansea goalkeeper. But just watching the big monitor here at Barasti, and he wouldn't predict who is the actual Premier League side. So they're just knocking the ball about Sheffield Wednesday. That is willingly, and Carvajal's return to the Owls, it's Hillsborough Stadium, has not started very well. It's still 0-0, but Sheffield Wednesday are on the ascendancy and look more like threatening to score a goal.
Thanks so much indeed. Dalo's keeping an eye on that one for us. It's on the big screen as well, and plenty to look forward to throughout the rest of the afternoon. Time now for us to introduce our first guest of the afternoon. And we do have, we're looking ahead, of course, at the ITU World Triathlon event down in Abu Dhabi. Something you know very well, Arch. You've been involved in it in the past.
I was involved in the old format, the International Triathlon, and yeah, have witnessed the growth of the ITU event now at Yas Marina Circuit. It used to be held down on the Corniche in Abu Dhabi, the beautiful Corniche, and it's moved to the circuit on Yas Island last year, so it's the second edition there. Looking forward to it. It's getting bigger and better every year. We're seeing more participants take part in all the different versions, the sprints and the long version, and international athletes seem to enjoy coming to Abu Dhabi to kick off the ITU season, and none more so than the growth. We've witnessed the growth of the sport locally.
Mm. Faris Alzaabi is an Emirati athlete who's competed in the triathlon down in Abu Dhabi, as he has in triathlons around the world. He joins us now from our broadcast position. Faris, good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, again, I mean, just to reiterate what Arch was saying there, I mean, is that something that you see from a competitor's point of view, the growth, not just of the event itself, but the sport here in the region?
Definitely. I think the sport is growing organically. I mean, I only picked up the sport about a year ago, but just speaking to friends and family, it seems like the sport has been growing for the past 5 years, I would say.
In terms of your journey, if you like, your journey into triathlon, what was it that sort of attracted you to the gruel that is triathlon?
Honestly, I was completing my undergrad in kinesiology back in Victoria, British Columbia, and one of my buddies in Abu Dhabi called me up and said, hey, you should race a triathlon. And obviously, coming from a football background, I was like, ah, no way, no way I'm doing this. So I came back.
That's what Dale says.
You know, I came back 6 months after, still adamant about it, and yeah, raced my first super sprint in Dubai, and I never looked back.
And since then, you've picked up a number of events around the world. You've had some great success during 2017, first place over in the Philippines, over in Jordan as well. Is each competition for you a learning curve at the moment?
Definitely. I mean, you got to start somewhere. And I'm quite enjoying racing in the age group format at the moment. And for me, honestly, it's about longevity in the sport. The longer I can be in triathlon, the better.
Is it fair to say that, you know, when you start the sport like triathlon, you must specialise in one of the disciplines? So you're saying you're a footballer, but were you an active runner? Were you a keen cyclist? Or, you know, were you a swimmer, to sort of have that key foundation element? Or you said, oh, I'm just going to give it a go here, and I'll pick up all three and run with it?
To be honest, never was a swimmer and never was a cyclist. Runner, obviously I picked up running because you have to run in football, basically. But, yeah.
I didn't.
But yeah, sometimes you just gotta take a new challenge and kind of see where it takes you.
And what do you find the hardest of the three disciplines then? Is it cycling or swimming the thing that you've had to spend more time on from a technique perspective and learning how your body reacts to the difference and the changeovers of those three disciplines?
So I think triathlon is not swimming, it's not cycling, and it's not running. It's a completely different sport. I mean, the way you swim in triathlon is not the same way you swim regularly. You gotta save your legs because you have the bike leg and the running leg coming after, so very kind of minute details, but definitely worth taking consideration.
Interesting about your journey, and I'm fascinated about this whole, you know, getting into the sport over a year ago. You talked there about your friends saying you could come down and do this thing as well. We've seen a number of initiatives down in Abu Dhabi specifically, Triass, getting people to live a more active lifestyle, demands active life programs down there as well. Again, were they part and parcel of the sort of convincing process for you? Has that been a pathway into the sport?
Of course, definitely so. I mean, I just raced Triass yesterday. For me, it's something I look forward to every year. You know, it's a kind of culmination of all the training and all the hours that you put in. All boils down to that 1.5 or 1 hour 15 minutes of a race. But it's rewarding at the end of the day.
You talk about your training and how you're sort of, you're trying to build for the future. You know, this is something you're in for the long term as well. How ideally suited is this part of the world for training? Because you're racing internationally at the moment as well, events around the world. Do you find that you do the majority of your training here? Is it a perfect place for training?
I think it's a great place for training. The nice thing about it is the predictability of the weather. I mean, right. It's sunny all year long, apart from the summer where it's time to train indoors. But usually over the summer, what you do is you'll go abroad for, you know, like a 2-week, 3-week camp and come back. Yeah.
just reading through your statistics as well, and try to put it into context, or try and get the improvement we've had over this year, because we're talking about this, you know, this guy has been competing for a year. Have you seen your times change in that year?
Definitely. I mean, I've seen a 20-minute improvement in my sprint distance triathlon, which to me is huge, and I think what it boils down to is sport. You know, sport can be brutally honest at sometimes, but it can be brutally rewarding at other times too.
Have you found that as you've raced more and you've kind of refined your training, are you finding it easier to sort of compete smartly and work out, you know, how you're feeling on the day, how your body is to react to those different disciplines to try and get more out of it? I mean, you're still young and you've only done it for a year, but you're sort of learning so much just as you're competing more?
I think I'll learn till my last day in the sport. I mean, you're learning every day. Yesterday I had a race over at Trias, and I learned so many things about nutrition, you know, like being prepped for the bike leg and then kind of pacing yourself on the run. So you're learning day in, day out, and that's what I enjoy about the sport.
And the popularity we talked about in the last decade here in the UAE, we've seen the rise of cycling's been a massive wave of popularity, and we've seen a lot of people go into multi-sport disciplines, whether it be running and cycling or a combination with the swimming added in there. Just why do you think the growth of triathlon has emerged so rapidly in the last decade, last even 3 to 4 years?
I think it's because, first of all, triathlon has three disciplines. You have swimming, biking, and running, and people just generally want to pursue an active lifestyle, and what better way of doing it than triathlon? You know, if you're, let's say you have an upper body injury, well, you can still cycle or run. If you got a lower body injury, then, you know, maybe get on the hand erg or something, you know. So there's always something to do, and that's what makes triathlon different at the end of the day.
Obviously, you're out there putting the hard yards. Yeah. It's a very individual, quite a selfish sport in many ways. But there is a team behind it as well. Just talk to us about your sort of support team. Obviously, coaches are essential to moving forward.
So currently, I'm being coached by a company called B78 that's run by Jasper Blake, who won Ironman Canada, and he's currently my coach. It's a bit tricky because I'm getting coached by distance, so time difference can be hard sometimes. 12-hour difference, that's hard. but no, I mean, we work it out. He gets my data, gives me feedback, and we kind of distribute the intensities and the load over the season.
The nice thing about triathlon, and we've had a few different guests over the last couple of weeks, is even if you're just a beginner to the sport and you want to try and find your legs, so to speak, you can enter the team versions. And the nice thing about the Abu Dhabi International ITU event is the ability for guys like, well, any day sportsman can enter a team and specialize in one of the legs. And I guess that's one of the nice things, if you can focus like yourself on the individual events, but there is that team element, which makes it quite fun and interactive from a team perspective.
Definitely. I mean, as you probably know, this year's ITU, they've got dedicated paratriathlete waves and waves for people, for Special Olympics athletes. And obviously that's part of the Abu Dhabi Sports Council's inclusivity. So I'm excited to kind of see everyone just have a great weekend of fun and triathlon, basically.
We're going to take a short break. We're going to continue this conversation with Faris in just a few moments' time. If you've got any questions for he, then feel free to text them through to us now on 4001. You can have your say online as well, at Dubai iSport, if you'd like to send us a tweet or a question over Twitter. If you're in the vicinity, though, do pop on over to Barasta. We're up here on the rooftop garden. It is The Grill with you through till 7.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.